Hi, and welcome to the At Peace Parents podcast. I'm Casey, and I'm here to empower you in your decision-making as a parent of a demand-avoidant child. My goal is to share insights that will generate aha moments and support your connection with your child. I'm a mom of two amazing little boys, one of whom is PDA, and I've worked with hundreds of parents just like you to teach them how to lead their child out of burnout and find the clarity, peace, and sense of community they need. Why isn't gentle parenting working for my PDA child or teen? Okay, so I want to talk about this topic to support you guys to understand where you might be getting stuck and where you might have stopped making progress with your PDA child or teen. And this is a personal story for me as well, because before I learned about PDA, I worked through a gentle parenting and sensory processing lens for an entire year. And it definitely helped and improved things as I stopped using behavioral approaches and traditional approaches to parenting, like consequences, punishments, incentives, timeouts, etc. So I want to speak on the topic of caregiving versus parenting and emphasize that if you have a PDA child or teen, you're doing both. And we need to expand beyond the idea of parenting into caregiving. And I'm going to talk about five things today with examples from my own life to help clarify how this shift in lens, in like the lens you put on to see your child and your life, will help you get unstuck in your sticky places. So, what do I mean by a difference between parenting and caregiving? I'm going to explain. So, first and foremost, I believe that PDA is a nervous system disability. Why do I believe this? And how do we understand disability? So disability is the inability or the being disabled from doing something that a person needs to be able to live. So activities of daily living. So I call these basic needs: hygiene, toileting, eating, sleeping, and safety. What do I mean by safety? Not ending up harmed or not alive. So that includes self-harm and suicidal ideation. And then we have some secondary basic needs, which are not as strong as an argument for it being, for PDA being a disability, but the inability due to nervous system activation for leaving the house, accessing movement, accessing engagement in things that the child or teen wants to engage in. Okay, so when I first came to PDA and my son received his autism diagnosis, my husband and I were having such trouble supporting him to eat. We were worried about a feeding tube, and he had largely stopped speaking. So in the vernacular of the autistic space, it appeared to be selective mutism. And I was unable to consistently keep everyone safe, right? Him and my other son, William, who at the time was 1.5, 2. And there was a lot of not just violent equalizing towards me, but also towards William. And that made it difficult for him to access the basic need of staying safe in the home. And then my PDA son, Cooper, would also elope or run out the front door or away from us into a neighborhood where one of us would have to, you know, run after him and the other would stay behind with the younger sibling. Okay, so for Cooper, the cumulative nervous system stress and burnout was disabling him from accessing eating, which you need to stay alive, and safety. Okay. For other children, it might be the cumulative nervous system activation makes it so that they're having physical challenges with toileting, like encopresis or severe constipation, withholding that leads to UTIs, or that they have a toileting regression where at the age of 6, 7, 8, they need to still be using a diaper. Okay, so these are just examples of how cumulative nervous system activation can disable access to the things that our children need to live. not just live a good life, but stay alive, okay? So I remember when my husband and I were in this moment of our parenting experience and realizing how impacted our son was and how impacted our family was, and he had the autism diagnosis, so we called the social services available here in Michigan to families with children that are autistic. And the conversation proceeded in a way that I think many of you are familiar with, which is your child's not severe enough to merit services, okay? And this is because my son was quite verbal. He could make eye contact, although less so, all of these things, much less so in burnout, and had friends, okay? So they were looking at severity of the disability through the social communication lens, and therefore he didn't qualify because he was a quote level one autism diagnosis, okay? However, the shift we have to start seeing for the PDA children and teens and adults is that even if they're not disabled severely, quote end quote, through social communication lenses, they are disabled by their nervous system activation. Okay, so I firmly and strongly and with every cell of my being believe and view PDA as a nervous system disability. Okay, and me saying that with you as parents on the call, that in and of itself might be really triggering. Okay, because many of us, you know, do not see our children through the disability lens, and with that comes caregiving, not just parenting. So let's take the first, like, most common thing we think of when we're like, okay, we have a PDA kid, let's lower demands. Okay, so often we think of lowering demands as like a parenting strategy or a low demand lifestyle or low demand parenting. And when I first learned about this, like 4.5 years ago, I was like, okay, like, I won't make him go to the grocery store. I won't organize play dates. I won't make him leave the house. I'll lower all of these demands. We're good to go. He'll be independent. Okay, but what you're gonna see as you lower demands as a parenting strategy is, like, they're not necessarily playing independently, even if they are. I mean, if they're an internalized PDA child, they might be, but for an externalized PDA, you're going to see, like, I'm bored. They can't necessarily engage in anything. You're taking away the demands, but it doesn't mean you're seeing them be more independent. That's the view through the parenting lens. However, through the caregiving lens, we understand that lowering demands doesn't just mean taking away neurotypical expectations of, like, we have to go to the play date or we have to attend this family function or I'm not going to take them grocery shopping with me anymore. It's also doing things for them. Lowering the demand of putting on their shoe, even if they are 9 and can physically put on their shoe sometimes. It is delivering food to the couch in order for your child to eat, lowering the demand that they would have to get up and get it or sit at the table. Okay, so all of these lowered demands, this is where parents start to get stuck because they're, like, viewing it as a parenting strategy. Okay, I lowered demands. But then we actually have to do the demands for them as an accommodation and as part of caregiving for these children and teens, if they're in burnout, or even individuals who actually can't access some of the things they need to stay alive. But as a parent, we're like, ugh, my child's out of burnout. Why am I still having to deliver them food, right? But when we're starting to view it as, like, this is a fluctuating disability, it's not gonna go away. There will be different levels of needs that we can't necessarily predict throughout their life. There is less resistance about delivering food, even in the moments when perhaps your child is eating more consistently. So that's the first thing I want to say. And I'm outlining these because I've gone through this mindset shift myself, and it will support and deepen your radical acceptance, which will shift the energetic frequency behind what you're doing, and your child will perceive it and their nervous system will come down. The third point, undivided attention. Okay, so in the gentle parenting space, I see lots of, like, give each child 10 minutes of undivided attention or set aside 15 minutes of playtime with your kid. And I think this is an awesome recommendation. And I often follow these ideas with my younger son, William, who's 5. Neurotype, unclear, but I don't believe he's PDA. But for a parent of a PDA child who sees these recommendations in the gentle parenting space, you're like, well, I just played with them for 20 minutes undivided attention, and the first moment I stopped, they were demanding my attention again, and there is no filling their cup, right? You're like, that didn't fill the cup. I could play with them for 8 hours and it still wouldn't fill the cup. That's because the logic of that is gentle parenting. And it's like, we're giving it as a nice to have, as a connection piece, right? And it's awesome. But for our children who have a nervous system disability, they actually need those constant signals of mammalian safety to their nervous system, because at the root, that's what the disability is, right? So like realizing like, oh, this logic of gentle parenting, it's awesome, but it does not apply, because it's not, oh, fill their cup and then we're good. It's setting up my life and the structures of my life so that my child can receive as much signals of one-on-one attention and safety as humanly possible throughout the day. Because otherwise, he's escalating in his perception of threat, and it's building to the point where, again, it will disable access to basic needs, okay? Let's talk about screens and siblings briefly through the lens of caregiving, through the lens of disability, rather than the lens of parenting or parenting philosophies. So, screens. I know that this is a very scary topic for many of us. On the paradigm shift call yesterday, you know, I was spot coaching with a medical doctor, and she's like, you know, I'm a pediatrician. I recommend to all of my families, like, limit screen time. And I've read all the research. And like, of course, all of us are conditioned by this narrative of like, screens are bad. They're going to lead to negative outcomes and self-regulation and learning and whatever, attention. But there's a couple of things to remember. We can view screens as neutral and observe how we can experiment with them as an accommodation or a tool to support our disabled children from accessing what they actually need, okay? In addition to regulation. Also remembering that all of the research is about averages, like a distribution. It's what shows in the middle. But guess where our kids are on a distribution? They're outliers. And those points, those data points, are best studied through a qualitative lens, through an individual ethnographic participant observation qualitative lens, okay? So let's talk about screens as an accommodation. And of course, notice, observe your child. Sometimes it can have a negative impact on regulation because of sensory sensitivities, etc. However, screens can often be an important tool in a family raising a child with a disability, because you are a caregiver and you're not able to shower or eat or tend to yourself. And sometimes as a caregiver, you just need a freaking break for 10 minutes so you can go shower, okay? We're not talking about parenting here. We're talking about a sustainable lifestyle as a caregiver of a child with a disability, okay? And if you're not ready to wrap your mind around disability, because I know it can be very triggering if you haven't thought about your child as this, suspend disbelief and experiment with this lens, because it will give you so much more compassion for yourself, and also understand that it's apples and oranges out there, people. Like, you know, you're following all these like great gentle parenting influencers, which I love. I share them too. And I'm like, sweet, they're awesome. They believe kids are good. Like, we're on the same page. However, don't let it make you feel like you're doing something wrong or that the strategies aren't working, because it's just apples and oranges. You're caregiving for a child with disabilities. So there's an additional layer. Okay, so let's go back to screens. Screens supported my son to come out of burnout, helped him learn how to draw again, okay? But they also helped him eat, right? So these are the trade-offs we make of like, you know, it's not ideal that my kid's on a screen for 12 hours a day. This was 4 years ago. Now it's more like an hour. To his choosing, we don't have screen time limits. He started eating more when he started to have a screen. Why? Because it distracted him from all the intense perceptual and sensory input as an autistic child. He had autonomy around the screen so that he could tune out everything else. It brought down his nervous system and he could consume food. He could eat. Okay, so we have to look at this through a cost-benefit lens of like, frankly, I don't care if he doesn't achieve the highest grades or have the best attention in the world due to screens, even if that logic were true, which I don't believe it is. I think it's the causality, I think, is undiagnosed in neurodivergent children end up watching more screens because they need it to regulate. And the neurodivergence is probably also what's causing the lack of self-regulation, trouble with school because they're not accommodated, and trouble with attention because they're neurodivergent. It's not the screen. It's they're opting into more screens because they're undiagnosed neurodivergent and their parents are allowing it, right? Like, if we're not controlling for ADHD, autism, all these things, the logic just doesn't make sense to me. But when I confronted this fear, I was like, you know what? Let's say it brings down his IQ by 10 points. I don't care because he's not eating, right? And I've worked with families where their children ended up on feeding tubes. So we just have to look at this clearly through the caregiving lens. Additionally, it's still a tool that many children, teens, I'm sure adults, use to help them use the bathroom, help them shower. Like, my son often, for like 2 years, would put an iPad outside of the bath so he could take a bath. And it's like caregiving, right? Like, it's okay. It's just okay. And we have to look at the cost benefit through the lens of caregiving for a disability, not parenting ideals and philosophies. Finally, siblings. I have an immense amount of guilt that emerges and comes up when I often on the weekends, currently in my life today, see my 5-year-old watching 6 hours of screens. Ironically, now my PDA son barely watches them, okay? But because of the lower demands, autonomy, equality accommodations that we have provided for my PDA son, I made the decision to apply many of the same accommodations to my younger son out of cost-benefit decision-making, which is a skill I teach in the Paradigm Shift program. And the decision that, you know what, I'm going to allow more screen time for my younger child too. And it's not ideal, okay? It's also not ideal that my younger son eats in front of an iPad, even though he probably doesn't need it. And he eats less healthy than he would if he were sitting at the table in a neurotypical home. But guess what? I don't have a neurotypical home. I have a child with a disability. And just like any other parent with multiple children and one of them has a disability, the sibling's gonna be impacted. It's not gonna look perfect. And we have to bring ourselves some compassion and look through the lens of the caregiver of like, yeah, it's not ideal. The sibling is impacted. It's not perfect. It looks a lot different than I imagined. But you know what? This is how we keep our peace, stability, and sustainable lifestyle in the face of raising a child with a disability. And I will figure it out. And he will figure it out. And I can always change. And we can always navigate things differently. Okay? So I invite you, out of compassion for yourself, out of compassion for yourself, to experiment with this lens so that you stop beating yourself up and expecting your life to look like other parents who are gentle parenting and like a parenting philosophy, okay? This is nuts and bolts, boots on the ground, in the trenches, parenting a child with a disability, and I'm here with you. I'm doing it every day just like you, and it's hard, and there are trade-offs. So I just want to say that I hope this was helpful for all of you guys. I am off to yoga to regulate my own nervous system, and I will see you here again soon. Bye. Thanks everyone for being here with me at the At Peace Parents podcast. This is your source for all things related to understanding, supporting, accommodating, and advocating for your PDA child. To go deeper on any of these topics, check out my course offerings and masterclasses at the website www.atpeaceparents.com. To completely transform the way you think about and relate to your child and to bring peace and stability to your home, join us for the next cohort of the Paradigm Shift program.